Friday night in Wisconsin, and what's for dinner? It's a fish fry, of course. Fish fries are a menu staple in mom-and-pop restaurants, VFW halls, church basements, all over the state. It's Wisconsin weekend, and the Friday night fish fry is one example out of many of culinary traditions passed down through the generations. Wisconsin's large German and Polish Catholic immigrant communities encouraged the fish fries we see today. Anna Altschwager is an assistant director of guest experience for Old World Wisconsin. Anna, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, why is ethnic cooking this obvious gateway to talking about similarities and differences in culture and history? How does cooking bind us?
That's a big question. A big part of what historians do is try and figure out ways to make history relevant to people. And food just shines as this great example. And it goes beyond that basic idea of, well, everyone eats, so therefore food is relevant. But it's the fact that we all have connections to the food. Food is a place, food is a people, and food is stories. And people love stories. So it's such a multifaceted thing. I've yet to have an encounter with someone where we don't start talking about food and it doesn't get them talking about their own history and their own stories and their own traditions. And that's what we seek to do every day.
So take us on a tour of Wisconsin. How can we begin to understand what cultural cuisine shows up here in our state?
Well, Wisconsin's a really special place to talk about food and a special place to talk about identity because it is such a mosaic of people and stories and landscapes. We've had people living in this state for over 20,000 years. So there's a lot of meals that have been cooked in that time. Mm-hmm. And when you look at the more contemporary European settlement waves that started to come in the 19th century, you get a great mix of it in different parts of the state at different times, all bringing with them their own traditions. And our land is so bountiful. We have such good soil and such good water and such a diverse array of habitats that it allows those food traditions to flourish. And that isn't always the case. If you are an immigrant group going to a desert region, there's only so many foods you can grow in a desert region, but we can grow so much here, it allows those recipes, you can keep cooking those same recipes, and then you can also have a local twist on it. So one of the things we may uncover today in chatting with guests is how the food traditions have changed over time and have become not necessarily a Norwegian dish, but a Norwegian immigrant dish or a upper Midwest dish. We really put our own spin on all of it.
And when we think of the groups and the food groups, for instance, lumping into that, we do think of German or Norwegian, perhaps Danish. But what are the big influences, the big ethnic influences to the food we're eating today?
Oh, my gosh, it's huge. It will vary depending on where you go around the state. I'm just going to rattle off a list of some of these, where some of these recipes come from. Potawatomi, Winnebago, Sioux, French, Yankee, Cornish, Polish, German, Czech, Norwegian, Finn, Dane, Swiss, Mexican, Filipino, Hmong. I mean, it's a huge cross-section. I think part of the key to these recipes that shine as Wisconsin recipes are the community piece of it, and that they're not things that people are cooking in isolation. Food brings people together, and we're very communal people, and especially in Wisconsin, that shines true with all of our social connections and church groups and supper clubs, and so it's the social recipes, the things, the big one-pot meals that everybody comes together around that become the popular kids, the ones that are iconic Wisconsin dishes.
I'm going to have you play favorites. What's your favorite social recipe? What is one that you really love to get people around you in the kitchen cooking and talking and helping you out on?
Oh, man. That's like a favorite kid, right?
Yeah. Anna, I said it wouldn't be easy.
No, it wouldn't be. You know, I think some of my favorite ones that we do at Old World Wisconsin, they do come from German kitchens, but that's just because it happens to be one of my favorite kitchens to cook in. But they're the really simple things like sauerkraut or horseradish, because it's a really easy process for everybody to get involved in. You know, everyone can help grate the horseradish or, you know, use the big mallet and get in at the sauerkraut. And so you can see families coming together and you're not intimidated to do that. It's not too complicated. I'm not handing you a krumkaka iron and saying go to town. And so you get kids trying it with their parents or their grandparents, and then they start talking. And they start talking about how, oh, my grandma made this, even if they're not German at all. You know, it could be a Honduran family that's with us, but those memories about food and preparing food, and they get talking, and that's what I love most about food. I love eating the food, don't get me wrong, but I love hearing people talk about food and what it means to them.
Why is your favorite kind of kitchen a German kitchen to work in, to cook in?
I'm just thinking of the kitchens we specifically have at Old World. We're blessed with a plethora of kitchens out here. We have homes. There are examples of traditional ethnic architecture from all over the state that have been picked up and brought to Old World, Wisconsin. We have 600 acres and over 60 buildings. So we've got some amazing kitchens. We have Finnish ones, Danish ones, German ones, Yankee ones. The German ones, the one in particular, has an amazing bread oven in it, and it's a summer kitchen, so it's actually a separate building from the house, so it's a dedicated space just for cooking. So it's a completely personal call, but our 1870s German immigrant kitchen is just my happy place.
We're talking right now with Anna Altschwager. She is Assistant Director of Guest Experience of Old World Wisconsin. And we're asking you on this Wisconsin weekend to think about your family recipes that have been passed down through generations, the places you like to cook in around Wisconsin, the places you like to frequent in Wisconsin for the particular food groups that we have here. So many ethnic influences. Join in this conversation at 800-642-1234. Is it a recipe that settlers brought over to a new world, or did they create a new tradition here? Maybe you learned from other communities in Wisconsin. Share your experience. 800-642-1234. We'll happily write down recipes as we go as well. If you have that recipe in your head, join us on this conversation here on Wisconsin Weekend. Anna, it's getting cold, and we tend to spend more time cooking and baking in our kitchen. It's also drawing closer to the holidays. Why do these weeks evoke connection to foods, to people who came before us? Why do we think of those past former generations at this time?
Well, holiday cooking is one of my favorites, again, not just to eat, but to talk about. Because it doesn't happen every single day. These are really special times for a lot of different cultures. And so the foods that we associate with things like a Christmas or a holiday celebration, you don't cook it every day. If you think about the past 200 years, you've only cooked it 200 times, where if it's a regular dinner night, you cook 365 dinners a year. So you have a lot of touches on that food, a lot of opportunities to tweak it, reinvent it, change it. It's mundane. It's something you do every day. Holiday stuff, you only do once a year. And so it becomes ritualized, and it doesn't change very much. You want to make it the same way your grandma did. And your grandma probably wanted to make it the same way that her grandma did, to keep that connection with the past. And so it's a much stronger connection to those recipes, simply because it doesn't get done as much. So you might say it's more authentic or it's more accurate, but it forges that tradition, and it keeps that tradition to everybody's past. And sometimes it's a connection to a Lutheran church basement, when, you know, that is the way the krumkaka was made. You always rolled it that way. And sometimes it's a technique, and sometimes it's a story you tell while you're making that food.
Krumkaka. Tell us, explain to us, what is krumkaka?
It's delicious. It's essentially a thin wafer or a waffle, and you make it on a specialty iron, and then you roll it up and usually put powdered sugar on it. It's a Norwegian treat. So many of these, the dessert recipes we talk about around the holidays, you find yourself going, oh, it's a German version of this or a Norwegian version of this, because they're all really similar, especially with the European recipes. The same basic ingredients are the same. But again, it's that little ethnic twist that gets put on it. You know, the Belgians have flat wafers. You know, they have an oblaten. Mm-hmm. The Norwegians roll theirs up and then have it on a fancy iron. So that's a krumkaka.
We're exploring culinary traditions now with Anna Altschwager. She's Assistant Director of Guest Experience for Old World Wisconsin. What is your go-to family recipe from past generations? Is it something that was brought over to a new world, or did your ancestors create a new tradition right here? 800-642-1234. We'll return after a check of the news, perhaps hear about your treasured food tradition in Wisconsin. The Ojibwe, Menominee, and other Wisconsin tribes would tap maple trees at the end of the winter when sap began to rise. The result was syrup and sugar. There's a tradition we see today. We're exploring Wisconsin's great food customs, its food heritage, with Anna Altschwager. She's Assistant Director of Guest Experience for Old World Wisconsin. How do you experience different foods in Wisconsin? Where do you go? What do you try? Is it German, Norwegian, Danish, Hmong, or something passed down by First People? 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let's go right to the phones with Jessica in Dodgeville. Hi, Jessica.
Hi, good morning. I have a lefse recipe that was passed down to me by my great-great-grandmother from Norway.
Aha. And tell walk us through it.
Well, it calls for riced potatoes, and my great-grandmother would only use potatoes grown in Wisconsin, and we usually use lard. It's rolled out. It's similar to a tortilla, basically made with potatoes. It's a little thinner. Some people put brown sugar. Some people put cane sugar. And we even had one of the residents at a nursing home who liked to put a little cocktail weenie rolled up inside of it. So it's an any way you want to eat it type of food.
Anna, is lefse very versatile?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I love that everybody's grandma has the right recipe. You know, and that's the one you make. Do you make it by yourself, or do you bring your family together to make it? How do you make it?
Actually, all of the ladies in my family, my mother, my aunt, my two sisters, my cousin, we all get together and we make it every Thanksgiving and every Christmas.
Excellent. Oh, I love hearing about it. And lefse is a great recipe. A lot of people do it that way. And, yeah, they follow that same recipe. And it's really, flatbreads are such a universal thing, too. You said it's like a tortilla. Or I've had other people say, it's like naan. The potato base makes some people go, it's like a latke. And they all have these traditions of people coming together, keep that tradition moving forward, and making it those special times of the year.
Will do. Thank you.
Jessica, thanks so much for calling in. Keep the tradition going. Karen on Facebook says, I eat lutefisk for Christmas Eve dinner. Anna, how about lutefisk going with your lefse?
How about lutefisk? Lutefisk is not everybody's cup of tea, but it's a really interesting culinary marker in Wisconsin and the upper Midwest in general, where people do still eat lutefisk, especially at the holidays or as part of a church supper, popular in Norwegian churches with a Lutheran church with Norwegian ties. Lutefisk is one of those foods that is considered an immigrant food because it's not eaten in Norway hardly at all today. It's very rarely found on Norwegian menus unless it's something really traditional. But it was a food that was eaten at the time that the Norwegian immigrants came to Wisconsin. So they brought it with them. And they kept doing it because it was a reminder of home. It was a connection to the place they came from. Meanwhile, Norwegian in real Norway, the culinary traditions kept moving forward and lutefisk was left by the wayside. But here in the upper Midwest, we've preserved the tradition because it's a cultural marker. It's an identity marker of what it means to be a Norwegian in this part of the world.
Should we attempt to make it?
It's to make it by yourself?
Yeah.
If you have a really good recipe and if you're cooking for a lot of people, it might be worth it. It doesn't smell great, and it takes a lot of preparation. It's not something you can just whip up for a single night. It's a dried cod that then is cod or any other white fish, and then it's reconstituted. It's kind of a gelatinous. I'm not making it sound good at all. You need to find a really good Lutheran grandma who can make it for you.
And the tradition of Christmas Eve dinner, I know my mom had passed down from her grandparents and great-grandparents oyster soup on Christmas, making oyster soup, and this was a German family. And I'm wondering, where does oyster soup come from?
Yeah, it's a German tradition. We also have a lot of Yankee families that bring it over. It's an English tradition as well, especially Christmas Eve or New Year's sometimes as well. The French do a lot of oysters, and so we have really deep French immigrant roots here from some of the earliest Anglos that came to the state. And it's not something we have every day because of the cost and the availability of the oysters. So sometimes it's just as simple as raw oysters. Sometimes it's a stew. Oyster dinners are something that you find year-round as well, so not just at Christmas, but community oyster suppers as fundraisers. Again, it takes a lot of work, and it takes some money and some planning, so they become these ritualized dinners.
Mm. What other foods might grace our tables at Thanksgiving and Christmas or on the holidays that have real strong Wisconsin ties?
Oh, gosh. They really vary family to family. I think some of them are Wisconsin ties and some of them are American. So things like turkey, you may have had different meats in the home country, but turkey kind of is the great unifier. You'll get some, we do a lot of really interesting puddings, English puddings and Yankee puddings that came over. A Czech one that we're doing this year that I like is called Vanoka, and it's a braided bread, and you make it before Christmas, so then it graces your Christmas table. So again, there's that preparation piece. It's not an easy thing to make. And Vanoka is a really interesting thing because it shows you that the recipe is one thing and the story is another thing. So there's a recipe for Vanoka. It's a sweet yeast bread, right?
Yeah,
it's like a lot of yeast breads out there. But the making of it has all these folk tales about jumping up and down for good luck while it's in the oven. And those are the things that families pass on.
And this is a Czech bread?
Czech, yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, and it's a braided bread. Is that right?
It is, yeah. And so you braid a certain number of twists on one level, and then you make another piece with a different number of twists, and you stack it on top of that, and then another piece, you stack it up. So when it's baked, it's this big, beautiful centerpiece. And so the kids sometimes help braid it, and then, yeah, you have to jump up and down for good luck while it's in the oven.
So that is a good luck food. Are there other good luck traditions with making some recipes?
Those are the things that families hold that are really slippery to research sometimes because they're not in the recipe. You know, the recipe is egg, flour, yeast, and so that gets preserved. That gets written down because you don't want to mess that up. But the stories keep getting told and told. So that's where you look at folklore research. You look at different cookbooks that are specifically about the immigrant experience and hearing from your guests, hearing from people say, well, my grandma said this is what we do for good luck, or you have to put the sixpence in, or you have to put that cocktail weenie in the middle of the lefse. Those are the slipperier folk aspects of it.
And are we seeing these recipes put down in writing and very carefully recorded, or are much of these traditions in Wisconsin still passed down through the oral tradition?
It really is a mix, and those little variations and the recipe for the lefse, my guess is that grandmother has that written down very carefully, and you probably have a folded up sheet of lined paper in grandma's handwriting in pencil tucked away someplace with the recipe. But the tradition of the recipe that all the ladies get together at Thanksgiving and we make it, maybe there's a bottle of wine, you know, maybe there's a fresh pot of coffee. Those are the things that keep the traditions moving forward. And those, unfortunately, aren't written down as much. They're just kind of taken as what we do. So please write them down. Please record them, because there are going to be people 50 years from now, 100 years from now. And those traditions are what's going to keep it alive.
We're talking right now with Anna Altschwager. She's Assistant Director of Guest Experience for Old World Wisconsin. And on this edition of Wisconsin Weekend, we're learning about the food traditions that hold strong through generations here in Wisconsin. Want to hear about your favorite family recipes, your favorite family traditions, especially this time of year? 800-642-1234. How have you seen a certain family recipe passed down through the generations? Where do you go this time of year to indulge, perhaps, or celebrate a particular type of food, type of tradition here in Wisconsin around food? 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Anna, how about baking in Wisconsin and the whole idea of you know, making so many different types of cookies at the holidays? Are there specific traditions here in Wisconsin around sweets?
Oh, absolutely. And I think they're fun to make, they're delicious to eat, and they're not something that necessarily takes as much planning as, say, a lutefisk. Right? So you can make them pretty quickly. And the ingredients are pretty simple, but you get a lot of variation. So peppernuts or pfeffernuss or pepperkoka, those are all a variation of a spiced molasses or brown sugar cookie. And you see different versions of those all over the place. So those are a big traditional thing, the peppernuts. My great-grandma had a recipe for peppernuts, and we all still make her recipe. a lot of sweetbreads and rolls are also really popular around the holidays. Less so candies here, but a lot of breads, a lot of cookies. Sour cream cake is something that's popular in Finnish homes. Hmm. So that's something we make a lot here. We have two different Finnish homes at Old World Wisconsin, and the Kermakaku is a sour cream cake.
Can you walk us through that?
So it's a really simple recipe. It's you cream together your butter and sugar, beat in your eggs. You put the dry ingredients in, so it's you know, flours and baking soda, cinnamon. Something that's in a lot of Finnish cooking is cardamom, which is not native to Finland at all, but it really fits with the flavor profiles that you do see, like cinnamon and anise. So you get, it's got cardamom in it, vanilla, and sour cream, and you pour it into a buttered loaf pan and you bake it. So it's just a really simple bread recipe, but the Finnish food ways are really strong, especially in northern Wisconsin, Bayfield and Ashland County. They're a newer wave of immigrants, and that they came in the early 20th century, and it's cold up there, right? So you spend a lot of time around nice warm stoves and warm kitchens, and this is a great Sunday morning treat or around the holidays if you're having people over in that week between Christmas and New Year's with some Finnish coffee, which is another great thing. If people haven't tried Finnish coffee, egg coffee. I don't know if you've ever made egg coffee.
No, but I've heard of it. And some coffee shops have really gotten into that, haven't they?
Yeah, it's amazing the number of things that people rediscover. Like, we think we've just rediscovered kale and kohlrabi. Well, we're wrong. You know, those things have been around for hundreds of years. But egg coffee is something that, I'm not a coffee drinker, but I like egg coffee. You take your ground coffee, not an instant coffee, but a ground coffee, put a half a cup, and you mix it together with a raw egg, shell and all. And this seems very counterintuitive, but trust me, just mash it all up together in a bowl, egg shells, raw egg, the ground coffee. Put it in a pot of water or your kettle of water and bring it to a boil. And then this is the key. You bring it to a boil, and then you let it go off the boil, and then let it boil one more time. So it's a two-boil process. And what that egg does is it will cook and it will pull all of the grounds together so it becomes a filter. So there isn't going to be yucky stuff in the coffee. And then the proteins in the eggshell actually take out all the bitterness of the coffee. So it is the smoothest cup of coffee you have ever had.
Nice.
It's delicious. So that with a nice slice of caramel cuckoo, it's perfect.
You're set. Let's go to Kim.
That's all you need.
Let's go to Kim in Eau Claire. Hi, Kim.
Hello. I've got a dressing recipe. My great-grandfather immigrated from Switzerland and moved into the Fountain City area, and the dressing recipe has been passed down. It's a very wet dressing. You take bread and you actually wet each piece with water and then wring it out, and you put your gizzards and liver and onions and grind that all up, and you melt butter and you pour cream in there, and it's quite, as the recipe said, make it sloppy, and then you bake it, and it's a very different way to make dressing, but it's very tasty.
Oh, Kim, thank you so much for sharing. Anna, what about this sloppy mess of a dressing?
Well, first of all, I just love that we're using the word sloppy, and I love that that is the language that was used by the great-grandfather, because you hear that person's voice then. You know, like, that's how you do it. You roll up your sleeves, and it's a mess, but it's worth it. You know, so I love that connection to it. Yeah, dressings are one of those things that they translate really easily, especially from European cultures to the upper Midwest, because a lot of the ingredients we're still able to find. And so you can make it as exactly as the recipes said. Sounds delicious. Sounds like you could get a really moist bird.
Kim, thank you so much for calling in. Let's go to Justin now in Madison. Hi, Justin.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
So we've got a kind of a family recipe. We're not sure if the name of it is right, but we call it babalki. It's a small bread bun, and then we kind of simmer that in a mixture of poppy seed, brown sugar, and raisins. We think it's from a Czechoslovakian background. Wondering if your guest knows anything, has heard anything similar to that, or knows any more about that.
Yeah, it sounds really Czech, potentially Austrian, anything from kind of Eastern Europe. Those ingredients, those are really iconic recipes or ingredients in terms of the poppy seeds and the raisins. The simmering is also a really interesting technique that you see across Northern Europe that comes over. So you find English recipes and then, again, some Czech and Austrian recipes that simmer as well.
Is this served at a specific time of year?
Typically, right around Christmas. It's a kind of a Christmas tradition that's been passed down from at least my grandmother, probably great-grandmother.
It's not one that I know the name of off the top of my head, but I do have to say I am not the most well-versed in the Czech and Austrian recipes, but there's a lot of great resources out there I could point you towards to try and essentially source it and find a different version. One is a book that is out by the Wisconsin Historical Society Press, called The Flavor of Wisconsin. And it goes through a whole bunch of ethnic recipes that were made in Wisconsin, different either your breads, your cakes, your frostings, your meats, and it also gives the ethnic history behind them all, and it has some of the different names that they're also known by. So I think picking up a copy of that and kind of flipping through might be a good first step to try and see where exactly this fits into the mosaic of sweet recipes.
Justin, thank you so much for calling in. Turkey, cranberry sauce, wild rice, apple pie, the culinary traditions in Wisconsin all really reflect what might be on the Thanksgiving table. Do you embrace cultural cuisine when the holidays draw near? Is it a community affair? Do you cook with other people? 800-642-1234. Join in the conversation as we explore the state's culinary heritage with Anna Altschwager. She's Assistant Director of Guest Experience for Old World Wisconsin. We'll be back after a news update. Wisconsin's farmers markets, its local restaurants, farm tours, they all offer an abundance of old world culinary traditions. It's Wisconsin Weekend, and we're crisscrossing the state this hour, exploring the food passed down through the ages. Early settlements and the industrial boom in the 1800s brought immigrants from around the world to Wisconsin. The food heritage is alive and well in communities. Anna Altschwager stays with us. She's Assistant Director of Guest Experience for Old World Wisconsin. You can join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. Perhaps you make your own Kringle. How about crafting sausage? Maybe you're in the market for some lutefisk or booyah. Have you taught your son or daughter or grandchild how to make these recipes? 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let's go to Rick in Colfax. Hi, Rick.
Good morning. Good morning. Say, I don't have a recipe to share, but I'm wondering if you folks know who or how and when the Friday night fish fry became established or popular. I grew up actually in Southeast Wisconsin there, and it was so popular in the Milwaukee area and down that way. Moved into Eau Claire about 20 years ago, and it's nowhere near as popular up here. And I'm just curious how the Friday night fish fry got started and who started.
Well, yeah, you're in a great part of the state to talk about it. So, you know, I don't have the exact how early they started. They definitely started with churches and associated with Lent, with both Norwegian and Catholic communities. You've got a great mix of that in the southeastern part of the state. And it's the social coming together, a way for people to get together, not have to worry about cooking, which is a nice break if everyone is you know, working all day, especially if you know, when people are working in factories or coming together, not having to have real meat, quote unquote, having fish on Friday nights. And it's something that is ubiquitous across the upper Midwest, partially due to our great fish. We have fish available in great quantities at a low price. You can feed a lot of people for not a lot. So community halls and churches could come together and cover the costs of that without breaking the bank.
What are some of the sides, Anna, that go along with fish fries, the side dishes?
They really vary depending on where you are in the state. I'd love to hear from folks. I don't know if anyone's ever done a study of mapping all of the sides that go along with it. I'd love to hear from guests to hear what the right side is.
And the batter itself, is there one particular type of batter we use to dip the fish into?
You know, I'm not sure. I've got all these ideas now of to map that out.
Well, Rick, thank you so much for calling in with that question. Great question. And just go embrace one. Go indulge in a fish fry tonight, Rick. Go for it. Anna Grant.
So, Rick, I want to say to Rick, when he's out there, ask people, go around the tables and ask them, how does this compare? And start taking notes. I want to do a statewide oral history on how people think a fish fry should be.
You know what? Actually, that's exactly what I'm thinking about doing, because the variety is wonderful, and I just love going to the Friday night fish fry and seeing what I'm going to get. It's wonderful.
And it's going to change every single place you go. I love it. Start asking questions, Rick. Go out there.
I'm going to. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Rick. We had an email from Grant who says, one of my favorite breads I bake is a wild rice sourdough bread using native wild rice from Wisconsin, and that gives a beautiful nutty character to the bread. Anna,
oh, that sounds great.
Yeah, what is the origin of this wild rice sourdough?
You know, I don't specifically know with the sourdough piece, but some of our really traditional ingredients are used not only by First Peoples in terms of the wild rice and the cranberries and some of the cherries and things, but to see those be mixed with more modern things like a sourdough is great to keep those ingredients moving forward. And you can see those fingerprints all across food. You mentioned booyah earlier. That's mm-hmm. a great example of kind of this hybridization of here are these great ingredients or these great traditions or cooking techniques
that get mixed in, and you get these hybrid meals. So booyah, I don't know if everyone knows what booyah
yeah,
is.
Yeah, please explain.
Okay, so it's a big pot. It's a one-pot meal, usually made with chicken, and folks come together. It's really popular in Door County area, the Great Lakes, Upper Great Lakes region, similar to a Door County fish boil. And the term booyah might come from the word bouillie, which is a French word that means a soup or a soup base, because you get early French settlers, and specifically the Walloons, which are Belgian, French-speaking Belgian immigrants that came to that part of the state. But the one-pot cooking is something that you see with a lot of American Indian cooking techniques, with a wild rice base or a soup base or a fish soup base. So cooking in one big pot as a communal thing. So you have a really old indigenous technique paired with these early French influences of, oh, here's what we should put in the pot. And then we're calling it booyah today. So it's got vegetables in it, stewed chicken, and the more it simmers and the more the ingredients merge, the better it tastes.
Well, and let's try to fit in here one more call. Janelle in Hilbert, go ahead. We're short on time, but I'd love to fit you in, Janelle.
All right. It took my mom years to get the coveted German potato salad recipe from my dad's sister after grandma died. And it was about 4 years ago. My dad was at another function, and he's like, man, this German potato salad tastes just like my mom made. And his friend looked at him and said, you do realize that that recipe was in the church cookbook from back in, like, the 60s, 70s, whatever, that all of the church ladies shared their recipes. So we're assuming that's where Grandma's coveted German potato salad recipe came from.
those church cookbooks,
I love
to collect them. They really are. And as we close here, Janelle, thank you so much for calling in. And Anna, as we start to close here, any final thoughts on how we can continue these traditions, these food traditions?
Cook together, cook with your family, cook with your community, and talk about your stories. And be like Rich out at that fish fry, talking to people. Ask questions, tell the stories, keep it going. And remember that food is more than an index card with some recipes on it. Food is about the place. Food is about the people. And food is a story. It's the story we tell ourselves. So just keep talking and keep sharing those stories.
Well, Anna, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, well, happy cooking, everyone, and especially around the holidays. Try something new and try something old.
Anna Altschwager is Assistant Director of Guest Experience for Old World Wisconsin. And we're crowdsourcing Wisconsin Weekend. Tip us off on something cool that could reach all corners of our state. We'd love to produce a show on it. Send along your ideas for Wisconsin Weekend to mornings@wpr.org. That's mornings@wpr.org. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's executive producer Erica Janik.
Names are powerful. They can connect us to history and memory, to origins. Crystal Chan grew up with two names, one American and one Chinese.
The first time I realized that my mom was not mom, I was 5 years old. I lived in Oshkosh, and in the park across the street, the recreation department put on summer programming for children. I asked mom if I could go, and she said yes, so I ran across the street. The leader started registering me. What is your mom's name? She asked. I was confused. Her name is Mom. The woman smiled. What is her real name? Something deep inside me tremored. What do you mean? Go back to your mom and ask her what her real name is, the woman said tenderly. I ran back home in tears. Mom's real name? Who was she if she wasn't Mom? Was she an alien? Was I really her daughter? I dashed into the house, the door slamming behind me. What is your real name? I cried. What do you mean? Mom asked. And who asked you this? It was true. Mom was not Mom. The tremor exploded inside of me, and I broke down in sobs. Mom took me in her arms and gently explained that the entire world does not call her Mom. She told me her other name and walked me across the street to register. I, too, have another name. My English name is Crystal Melinda Chan, but that is not my full name. When I was born, my dad, who is Chinese, gave me a Chinese name. It is Mei Sun, which means beautiful coral. He grew up in Hong Kong, an island surrounded by coral. I grew up in Wisconsin, surrounded by land, and have never seen coral in my life. My name doesn't fit in the Midwest. And my name didn't physically fit either. On my birth certificate, because they do not have the space for additional names, my dad had to hand write in the traditional characters of my Chinese name. My dad called me by my Chinese name only when I was in trouble. Other than that, my name was hidden, a secret. When my novel, Bird, came out and started to be published around the world, my agent wanted to see if they could get my book into the Chinese market. She was a little hesitant, then said, "I'm so sorry I don't know this, but do you have a Chinese name? It could be helpful when we pitch the book to the Chinese publishers." My heart tremored again. Could there actually be a place in the world for my Chinese name? It was such a deeply hidden part of me, and it so rarely had the chance to surface, to have a purpose beyond people's idle curiosity. But maybe there was a place now, a place for all of me, with all my names. "Yes," I told my agent, my voice thickening, "I have a Chinese name. I'll write it down for you."
Crystal Chan is a storyteller and the author of Bird. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life on our website, wisconsinlife.org, and on Facebook. I'm Erica Janik.
And the Morning Show is produced by Keely Boltina and Nyasia Ellison. Michelle Johnson is executive producer. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.